Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Bailey reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, August 15th. MISD could spend $2 million on safety mandate by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD will deal with a state mandate having to do with school safety at its meeting Tuesday. Midland ISD Board has two items on the agenda of its 5:30 p.m. meeting at Bowie Fine Arts Academy. The first is the discussion of and request for approval of a resolution regarding armed security officers at each campus as required by the state. The second is the approval of Memoranda of Understanding between MISD and MPD, MCSO, and Texas DPS for provision of off-duty officers at MISD campuses. Board approval will allow the superintendent to develop an alternate standard with which the district is able to comply to Texas Education Code 37.0814, which was amended to require at least one armed security officer to be present at each campus during regular school hours. The district is seeking the solicitation of off-duty law enforcement officials, specifically 15 MPD officers, 11 sheriff's office deputies, and 14 Department of Public Safety troopers. The cost to comply with House Bill 3 are estimated at up to $2.049 million until the district is able to hire more of its staff. That cost is for 28 officers at $50 per hour for 183 school days, according to Midland ISD. This law goes into effect on September 1, 2023, the district reported. As of today, the Texas Education Agency has not released any guidance to districts or proposed rules regarding its legislation. Because the law will go into effect prior to the next regularly scheduled board meeting, and there is substantial uncertainty regarding the rules which may eventually be put into place, MISD must act now to ensure compliance. This board resolution will allow MISD to claim a good cause exemption from compliance due to a lack of availability of funding, personnel, or both. The MISD Police Department is working to contract with three local law enforcement agencies to provide off-duty officers. In order to meet the new requirements of TEC 37.0814, but this exemption will allow for additional time to align those resources should that be necessary. Midland ISD, in its agenda packet, shows plans for a police department expansion to include a chief of police, two lieutenants, three sergeants, two canine officers, two investigative officers, two radio operators, and 42 police officers. In June, Midland ISD reported that its department had 22 positions, and 13 of those were filled. The Reporter Telegram reached out to Midland ISD for information on this story. MISD Board to discuss tax rate options. One scenario includes the district increasing the rate to help pay off bond debt, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD leaders will discuss Tuesday taking action on an increase to the interest and sinking INS tax rate to help make a dent or even eliminate the amount of bond debt the district currently has. At the special board meeting about the proposed bond on Thursday, district leaders learned of an opportunity to take advantage of the exemptions and compression that appears set to take place for property tax owners across the state. The legislature has passed and the governor signed legislation that would compress maintenance and operation tax rates and increase the state homestead exemption from $40,000 to $100,000 across the state. In response, district leaders learned of an opportunity to increase the district's INS tax rate to help make an impact in the amount of bond debt that the district currently has. The Texas Bond Review Board indicated that going into fiscal year 2023, Midland ISD faced total debt payments of $209.056 million, $154,225 million in principal, and $54,083 million in interest. The district has reported this year being able to decrease that amount. Over the past 10 years, the savings from refunding and deficits over the past 10 years have been $56.24 million, according to the district. Multiple attempts by the Reporter-Telegram to get up-to-date numbers Monday ahead of Tuesday's meetings were unsuccessful. Numbers is a presentation on Thursday, including that the average market value of a home inside Midland ISD's tax area is $341,046. Exemptions, the local exemption, $34,105, and state exemption, $40,000, drop the taxable home value to $266,941. Factoring in a total rate of 91.48 cents per 100 valuation, and the annual tax payment is $2,442. Midland ISD also reported that the proposed increase in the state homestead exemption, that the taxable home value drops to $206,941, and the tax collection falls to $1,893, a decrease of $593. One proposal, one that multiple board members expressed some amount of support for, includes taking advantage of the homestead valuations and the compression of the maintenance and operation tax rate, which could drop from 84.46 cents to 65.95 cents. With an increase of the I&S rate from 7.02 cents to 25.53 cents, in that scenario, Midland ISD leaders could tax the total tax rate the same this next year and pay off that total bond debt, including as much as $34.981 million in interest. That scenario would allow district leaders to tell potential voters that should they pass a bond, whenever that may happen, it wouldn't have as much of an impact on their respective tax bills. Also, raising the INS rate by such a large amount is allowed by law, and the tax money collected by an increase in the INS rate would not be subject to recapture. It was mentioned on Thursday that Midlanders would be impacted, as they would not get the relief expected should voters approve the legislators' property tax relief in November. The item, according to the Midland ISD agenda, is a discussion item. Bond Committee Approves Single Proposition by Stuart Doreen. The Midland ISD Bond Planning Committee will present a single proposition to the Midland ISD Board during its monthly meeting Tuesday. The committee changed its recommendation to have one proposition with $1.415 million with all five projects instead of having two propositions and the five projects split between the two. The committee met Monday evening at Legacy High School. Members talked about one bond simplifying the process for voters and was the right move, especially as the district appears on the verge to set a tax rate that will help the district pay off the bond debt from previous years. "This makes it simple and clean," said one of the bond planning committee presenters. Committee members also stated they appreciated the work that went into lowering the amount of money saved as the district checked the cost of the original presentation. The recommended budget presentation will have a cost of $1.415 billion, down from $1.678 billion. County Ends American Library Association Partnership by Ben Schaefer. Midland County Commissioners voted to end their partnership with the American Library Association on Monday. Precinct 4 Commissioner Diane Anderson said it was because of the American Library Association's new president, Emily Drabinski. Drabinski, in celebration of her election as ALA president on April 13th of last year, described herself as a Marxist in a since-deleted tweet. The decision comes after months of discussion between Midland County and Midland County Public Libraries regarding content in local libraries. In July, Fox News reported that the Montana State Library Association withdrew from the American Library Association. Our oath of office and resulting duty to the Constitution forbids association with any organization led by a Marxist. Part of the Montana State Library Association's letter to the ALA read, Midland County will remain as part of the Texas Library Association. Synergy donates $30,000 to anti-trafficking group by Morgan Taylor Thomas. West Texas-based movie group Synergy donated $30,000 to Jaco Buyan's Ministries, an anti-trafficking organization, using profits from Sound of Freedom ticket sales. According to a statement from the entertainment company, during the movie's first 2 weeks of release, early to mid-July, Synergy took $1 from each ticket sold at its Amarillo, Coppers Cove, Granbury, Marble Falls, Midland, Odessa, Tulsa, Oklahoma, locations for the donation. The film follows a federal agent's journey while rescuing trafficked children. Jaco Buyan's Ministries conducts awareness prevention, training, policy and global analysis, and real-life rescues throughout the country. The organization also focuses on familial restoration, an important factor in the fight against human trafficking due to over 40% of traffickers in the U.S. being family members, according to the organization's website. The Synergy financial support will further directly impact rescues, as well as active investigations into human trafficking networks, said founder Jaco Buyan. Half of the donations will be applied to active case management for two current investigations focused on child sex trafficking in Texas and Pennsylvania. The other half of the donation will be used for the ministry's rescue and stabilization. Here, JMB rescues survivors and then gives 5 days of post-rescue caregiving while establishing long-term care placement. Midland's very own anti-human trafficking group Reflection Ministry also talked to the Reporter-Telegram about the movie's impact as well as the need for deeper discussion on the topic. Midland County rakes in record sales tax collection by Stuart Doreen. Midland County is already 35% above the sales tax forecast for the entire year and has 3 months left in its fiscal year. The Texas Comptroller's Office reported in August that Midland County collected $7.22 million in sales tax, a high mark for any month this year. That monthly collection brought the fiscal year total to $58.289 million, which is just $4.36 million behind last year's entire fiscal year total, $62.65 million, and more than $15 million greater than county's forecast for the entire fiscal year, $43 million. Should Midland County finish with the same amount as last year, through the last 3 months, $17.502 million, the county would finish the fiscal year with $75.702 million, or $32 million above forecast. The record for sales tax collected in a fiscal year is $63.324 million in FY 2019. Through August, Midland County has collected $58,289,622. That total is 29.11% higher than the total year-to-date last fiscal year. Midland County Judge Terry Johnson has previously told the Reporter-Telegram that sales tax money can be volatile, and the volatility is why it is harder for the county to forecast. The $43 million sales tax budgeted for fiscal year 2023 was a best guess estimate based on the information which was available at the time of budget preparation, Johnson wrote. Johnson added the previous 12 months' collections, less than a conservative 20%, has been a rule of thumb. The county has now surpassed its forecast in at least 11 of the last 12 years. Sales tax revenue is generated by sales tax income from 2 months prior to collection. August collection is based on June sales. The county's fiscal year begins in December and ends in November. MISD advanced placement students show marked improvement. Midland ISD announced last week the recognition of its students as College Board Advanced Placement AP Scholars. Results show the number of MISD students named AP Scholars has more than doubled since 2019. This accomplishment is complemented by an increase in average scores earned by students in each award category. MISD students have displayed exceptional dedication as demonstrated by their performance in AP exams this spring. Students are scored on a scale of 1 to 5, with a score of 3 or higher considered qualifying to count as college credit. 2023 AP Scholar Award highlights. AP Scholars. In 2019, 40 MISD students received the AP Scholar Award with an average score of 2.53. In 2023, 87 students earned the AP Scholar designation with an average score of 2.76. AP Scholars with Honors. In 2019, 6 students were named AP Scholars with Honors with an average score of 3.0. In 2023, 14 students earned this honor with an average score of 3.51. AP Scholars with Distinction. The pinnacle of achievement, the AP Scholar with Distinction Award, was granted to 26 MISD students in 2023, up from the 3 students awarded in 2019. The average score of 4.04 for these exceptional students underscores their dedication and excellence. In the 5 years of testing from 2019 to 2023, the total number of AP Scholar awards surged from 49 to 127. Overall participation in AP programs and exams has also increased since 2021. 32.4% of students who took the exams in 2023 received qualifying scores, compared to 24% in 2019. MISD is proud of these students' exceptional accomplishments and extends gratitude to the support provided by staff and parents to help students achieve these goals. The sustained growth of MISD's AP metrics, especially in light of the 3 years post-COVID, has been bolstered by the support of a 3-year grant from the National Math and Science Initiative. The grant facilitated enhanced professional development for teachers, student support, and data analysis. The extension of these programs further supports the district's commitment to preparing students for academic success. Work at Loop 250 should be done this fall, by Stuart Doreen. The roadwork at Loop 250 in State Highway 191 has created issues for those traveling in West Midland. Motorists traveling to the Westside HEB or Sam's Club have been impacted by an $18.245 million construction project that includes concrete work and repaving, according to the Texas Department of Transportation. TxDOT states that the contractor is working on the remaining concrete work at the intersection and they still have some curb and gutter to do in the area. Once those are complete, we have to repair the white topping on the rest of the intersection. Final hot mix service is scheduled for late August, and work should be completed this fall, TxDOT stated. The project impacts all directions of the intersection and includes lane limitations and closures. Remains of Missing Midland Man Found Near Van Horn, by Mercedes Cordero. The remains of a Midland man reported missing by his family last week has been found east of Van Horn, according to the Culberson County Sheriff's Office. Rene Alberto Legarreta Vargas, 23, was found 30 miles east of Van Horn by a local rancher, the Culberson County Sheriff's Office reported Sunday on its Facebook page. A local rancher reached out to Culberson Sheriff's Office Saturday after locating a deceased body on his ranch, the Sheriff's Office shared. Evidence located near the body confirmed the remains. The cause of death is under investigation. 2 dead in collision in northwest Ector County. 2 people are dead after a 2-vehicle collision in northwest Ector County on Friday, according to Department of Public Safety officials. DPS reported that a 2016 Chevy Silverado was traveling southbound on Farm to Market 181 when it veered from the southbound lane into the northbound lane, striking a 2021 GMC Sierra. The driver of the Sierra, Irving Cortez Morales, 31, of Odessa, and passenger Alexis Rodriguez Alvarez, 25, of Far, were pronounced deceased at the scene, according to DPS. A second passenger of the Sierra and the driver of the Silverado were transported and treated at the Medical Center Hospital in Odessa. The collision happened at 6:05 a.m., 8 miles north of Goldsmith. DPS reported all passengers were wearing seatbelts. The crash remains under investigation. Unselfish Bailey Ready to Help Coahoma Succeed by Oscar LeRoy. Senior Billy Bailey might never come off the field for the Coahoma football team this season. Whether it's offense or defense, Coahoma fans might see the 5'9", 140-pound versatile athlete play a number of positions because he has the ability to do whatever the Bulldogs need him to do to be successful. For example, on offense, he can play any wide receiver position. He can line up at quarterback, and he can also line up in the backfield as a running back. Last season, Bailey had 27 catches for 49 yards and 3 TDs, rushed for 340 yards and 3 touchdowns on 41 carries, and threw for 214 yards and 3 more touchdowns. Bailey was not only a first-team All-District receiver, but a first-team All-District defensive back, and he also was an honorable mention selection as a utility player on the Texas Sports Writers Association Class 3A All-State team. While this might be a big load for some players, it's just a day's work for Bailey, who only cares about helping the team win. "Playing every game the hardest, win one more," said Bailey when asked about his motivation on the gridiron. "And then once you get to the playoffs, win one more. The motivation is to win. It comes from the coaching. They give great motivation to play your hardest every day, practice your hardest every day, and get better every day." Head coach Chris Jocelyn said Bailey means a lot to his team and just raves about his work ethic and desire to be a great teammate. "We haven't had a kid anywhere who's been able to play 6 positions on offense, 6 positions on defense," Jocelyn said. "When you give him time, he can do anything. Number one, he's a great kid. He shows up for everything, and that's a testament to him. His first 3 years in high school, he was a 5-sport varsity player. He'll probably do the same thing this year and plays at a high level. On the football team, he plays a bunch of different positions and plays them all the same. He plays them well." Bailey is used to the grind by now at Coahoma, and he also plays on the basketball team, runs track, is a good baseball player, and also is on the golf team. Jocelyn said Bailey not only sets a good example for the other players, but is as good as a leader as well. "He's always been a leader, for example, but he's been more vocal," Jocelyn said. "He's always been a leader since his freshman year of doing things right and being out there every day. He may only weigh, on a good day, 140 pounds, but he's very durable," added Bailey. "It's very important to try to lead the younger guys and let them know that it's okay to mess up, just mess up at 100 miles an hour." Bailey showed the leadership before the start of the 2022 when he and the then freshman quarterback, Boyd Cox, would get together and work out. The time spent not only helped the young quarterback get ready for his first varsity season, but it helped create a strong bond between the two. Cox would go on to earn the District 4-3A Division 2 Newcomer of the Year. "We're always out here working out together and throwing the ball and stuff, trying to get better," Bailey said. "We bring a couple of guys out here. Last year, we had just great chemistry, and this year, we're just building off of that." Bailey is not one to rest on past success, and he's always looking to improve. "I think I had a good season about 2022. I think this year I can do better and have different goals for myself to help this team out. I just want to do whatever I can and do what coach tells me to do. I just want to be there and do it the best of my ability." Bailey and the Bulldogs certainly want to build off last season's successes, as they might have surprised some people by going 7-4 overall, finishing 3rd in district, and making the playoffs. With the number of players returning this season, the Bulldogs are aiming higher this season. "Our goal is to go deep in the playoffs. I think we can," Bailey said. "We've got to play hard every game in district and win district, which is another goal that we have." Speed is the key for sure. Speed up front, speed on the D-line, O-line, and then on the outside. We all have speed. And since this is his senior year, Bailey wants to make sure he gives it all. "It's different being a senior," he said, "but I'm excited. You just want to play your heart out."
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, August 15th. OC hears hospitality management proposal. Offering a hospitality management program was presented to the Odessa College Board of Trustees during a workshop meeting Monday in the Wood Math and Science Building. The program would be up for approval by the board at their 6:30 p.m. August 22nd meeting in the Zant Room of the Salisbury Campus Center. Associate Vice President for Adult, Continuing, and Workforce Tiffany Price said it would couple with a culinary arts program. The college's community advisory board is seeking this degree, especially the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Price said it would be built to align with the ExxonMobil BAAS Leadership and Management Occupational Health and Safety Management Degree Program. The closest hospitality management programs are at El Paso Community College and Texas Tech University. Next steps are to get certification from the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board, post the program chair position, and hire for that position, put a program application into the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools Commission on Colleges, and prepare for the program to start in fall 2024 or spring 2025. Price said hospitality jobs were lost during the pandemic, but they are coming back. Vice President for Academic Partnership Jonathan Fuentes spoke about the FAST dual credit program. The FAST program provides funding to participating public institutions of higher education so they can offer dual credit courses to educationally disadvantaged students at no cost. The Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board website said, currently, the maximum in-district cost for dual credit students is $55 per credit hour, and in the extension areas, it's $70 per credit hour, Fuentes said. What we're requesting is that we move to $55 for the max rate per credit hour for all students in district and out of district. When they announce the max rate, we think it's going to be $55 right now, but whatever that max rate is, we'll adjust our tuition so that it falls in line with the FAST funding that is made available by the state, Fuentes said. Then, in addition, fees will be waived, so FAST-eligible students do not pay the tuition, books, fees, or supplies. What we'll do is we'll pay with the ISDs or whoever the payer is on what they may be able to pay, Fuentes said. ISDs stands for Independent School Districts. Hearings on the OC tax rate will be held at noon September 7th and 6 p.m. September 12th on the first floor of the Salisbury campus building. The actual tax rate will be voted on at the September board meeting. The proposed rate is 0.149417 per $100 valuation for maintenance and operations and 0.021744 per $100 valuation for debt service. The total would be 0.171161 per $100 valuation. The current rate is 0.164191 per $100 valuation for maintenance and operations and 0.024452 per $100 valuation for debt service for a total of 0.188643 per $100 valuation. Vice President for Student Services Kim McKay said up until this point, transcripts were provided free of charge, but since the cost of printing and electronic delivery has increased, they are requesting the board charge a nominal fee for student transcripts after they order the third one. Last year, June to June, They had almost 6,000 students order 10,000 transcripts. There are a lot of transactions that are going on that regard to transcripts being sent all across the country. On average, students order 4 transcripts a year. Our traditional students are ordering 1 to 2 transcripts. Our dual credit students are ordering 4 to 6, and that's typically because they apply to 4-year institutions in October or November, McKay said. The cost of the institution annually is close to $40,000. Our recommendation for you all is to provide students with 3 free transcripts a year and then $5 for transcripts 4 through 10 and $10 for transcripts 11 or more in the same academic year. Then that counter would restart every year so that they get their 3 free once again, McKay said. The college commits to investing $11.70 in transcripts costs per student annually. There will be no charge for the 5,300 students who requested 3 or less transcripts. There were 5,771 students who ordered less than 10 transcripts, and they'll be charged after the 3rd transcript, the $5. There were 859 students that ordered 5 to 10 and only 21 that ordered more than 10, McKay said. Really, the cost to students is nominal. It's not going to make a big impact, but it shows students that there is a cost associated with doing business. It also prevents some of our frequent flyers to order upwards of 80 transcripts a year, she added. Board Chair Gary Johnson said the proposal will be recommended to the board. The board also heard a request to fund 8 body cameras for the Odessa College Police Department for $4,654. These will be replacements. Read to Felix, the Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled Read to Felix for children of all ages from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Thursdays at the third floor auditorium in the Children's Department. Felix is a therapy dog that loves to be read to. Visit tinyurl.com/23RKC4DU. Spider-Man swings into the Wagner Noel. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788 Midland, will present Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse live in concert on September 20th. The Academy Award-winning film from Sony Pictures Animation will be accompanied by a live orchestra, band, and turntables with a scratch DJ playing music from the score and soundtrack. The doors will open at 6:30 p.m. and the event will start at 7:30 p.m. Tickets start at $39. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/33KMWF6F. Founders Blend Set, UTPB's Office of Innovation and Commercialization, is hosting Founders Blend at 8 a.m. Wednesday at the CEED Building, 1310 FM 1788 Midland. Founders Blend is a coffee and networking event for entrepreneurs. It's a time for business founders, owners, and investors to come together and support other local businesses and share their wisdom gained through similar experiences. Doors open and coffee is poured at 7:30 a.m. and the event starts at 8 a.m. World's Worst Polluters Unrestricted. Energy experts say economics, power-seeking take precedence. The Asia-Pacific nations are spewing more carbon dioxide into the air than any other region in the world, but the very compliant Permian Basin and other top American oil and natural gas-producing areas are still taking it in the neck from federal regulators because they are sitting ducks. Nations that aren't members of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development are fouling the atmosphere willy-nilly, and Odessa oilman Kirk Edwards, Waco economist Ray Perryman, and 2023 Permian Basin International Oil Show President Larry Edwards say China, India, Russia, and the others don't give a hoot. It's interesting how many parts of the world, including the United States, are drastically reducing the amounts of so-called greenhouse gas emissions, while other parts, mainly China, are doing their best to put more and more emissions into the air, Edwards said. This world cannot have a net reduction in greenhouse gas emissions when China is building a new coal plant literally every week and connecting it to their electric grid. China doesn't care about any accord that others on this earth have toward that goal. They don't care about Ukraine's people being slaughtered as they buy cheap Russian oil on the black market. So the conclusion of this is that there will never be a net lowering of emissions if China and other emerging countries are not on board. And there is no way they will be on board anytime soon. They simply don't care. The European Commission's Emissions Control Database for Global Atmospheric Research, EDGAR, says China, India, Russia, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Brazil, and Turkey all had higher CO2 emissions in 2021 than in 2019, with Turkey's 7.9% being the biggest bump. EDGAR reports that biennial decreases were achieved by the United States, Japan, South Korea, Indonesia, Canada, South Africa, Australia, Mexico, and the 27 EU nations, with Mexico's 13% reduction leading the way. Perryman said emissions are rising in many nations as a natural production of population growth and economic development. For example, China's CO2 emissions are already twice as high as the United States's, but China is constructing substantial coal-fired electric power generation facilities on a continuing basis, as well as supporting similar facilities in other areas, Perryman said. Some countries are rising from extremely low levels of emissions simply because they are finally seeing some industrial development, wage growth, and a resulting increase in wealth. Such increases in emissions were regrettable, are helping to solve other major world problems such as extreme poverty and hunger. Other nations like China are more developed but are still willing to increase emissions to achieve economic growth and the resulting power on the world stage. Perryman said many of the offending countries are on record as working to reduce emissions, but they are willing to push meaningful reductions into the future to avoid having their people starve or to see economic growth constrained. In a broader context, it is imperative that we both address the climate situation and assure adequate energy resources to support growth and emerging prosperity for billions of impoverished people, he said. It seems that policies all too often address one of these issues and ignore the other. We need comprehensive approaches which recognize both realities. In the language of algebra, the world is facing a simultaneous problem. Perryman said there is realistically little the U.S. or other OECD countries can do to compel compliance with global goals, climate goals, particularly in policies that are not cognizant of energy needs. The emerging countries of Asia and elsewhere are sovereign nations, and the scope of actions that could be taken is obviously limited to working towards sustainable climate agreements and incentivizing compliance to the extent possible, possibly through financial means, he said. Other important actions include research and development into a variety of methods of reducing emissions, from better and cheaper ways to burn fuels, cleaner or more efficient power generation capabilities. Ideally, investments will go in directions that make the most difference in terms of bang for the buck in countries where emissions are most likely to rise rapidly. This is a complex issue that requires a multifaceted approach. Richard said one of the largest challenges in the Asia-Pacific region of the globe is tied to its greatest opportunities. You can't blame countries for wanting to provide a better standard of living and low-cost energy to their growing populations, but we can help them convert to technologies with lower greenhouse gas emissions, he said. Coal-fired power plants are still the norm in much of this region, producing the highest amount of greenhouse gases of any fossil fuel per kilowatt of energy produced. Meanwhile, vast amounts of natural gas, primarily methane, are vented and flared by the national oil companies in much of the region. When vented, methane gas has over 30 times the greenhouse gas effect of CO2, allowing for huge improvements in greenhouse gas emissions when methane emissions are targeted. When used in power plants, methane gas is the cleanest burning of any fossil fuel because it's produced as associated gas in many of these nations. With their oil production, much of it is currently vented to the atmosphere or flared as a nuisance product. Richard said the worst polluting countries have an opportunity for a win, a huge win, by capturing this methane gas and using it to convert their electric power system away from coal-fired plants. These type projects are the low-hanging fruit for reducing global greenhouse gas emissions, with a potential for massive volume impacts in a very short time period, he said. Hopefully, the U.S. can assist with sharing best practices and lessons learned from our industry's successful targeting and use of these previously wasted methane gas streams in a way that can reduce the learning curve and the acceptance of new approaches and technologies. Ector County Library to host Storytime. The Ector County Library Children's Department, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled Storytime at 10 a.m. Wednesday, August 16th. There will be a Storytime craft available afterward. She donates to anti-trafficking organization. Synergy Entertainment Group on Monday announced that the company has donated $30,000 to the anti-trafficking organization Jaco Bullion's Ministries as a result of the Amarillo, Copperas Cove, Granbury, Marble Falls, Midland, Odessa, and Tulsa communities coming together to visit local Synergy Family Entertainment Centers and dine-in cinemas to see Sound of Freedom. For the first 2 weeks of the theatrical release of the film, Synergy will donate $1 from each ticket sold, a news release said. Odessan facing multiple charges after alleged assault and chase. An Odessa man is facing multiple felony charges after allegedly choking a woman, leading police on a drunken chase, and crashing into another vehicle. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a 28-year-old woman told police she was at the brewery on East 7th Street Thursday night when Hector Rodriguez Jr., 35, got upset with her because she was playing pool with some other people and pushed her to the ground, causing her to cut and bruise her knees. The woman said when Rodriguez followed her into the bathroom, he took her phone away from her, told her if she called for help, he'd kill her son, and proceeded to choke her. The report stated she ran to the Lyft restaurant where she called 911. An officer responding to the call spotted a vehicle matching the description provided to dispatchers traveling at an extremely high rate of speed on West 8th Street. When the officer tried to pull it over, the driver began swerving in and out of lanes of traffic, even going into the opposite lane at times, the report stated. The driver continued speeding and otherwise driving dangerously as the pursuit continued onto Grant Avenue and then Kermit Highway, the report stated. The driver ran the red light at Kermit Highway and Golder Avenue and collided with another car, according to the report. According to the report, the driver, identified as Rodriguez, had glassy, bloodshot eyes, smelled of alcohol, was unsteady on his feet, and slurred his speech. Rodriguez's behavior swung from calm to aggressive, and he resisted being placed in the back seat of the patrol car. Once in the car, he spit in an officer's face and, while at the hospital, fought having his blood drawn, the report stated. Rodriguez was arrested on suspicion of robbery, evading arrest with a vehicle, harassment of a public servant, driving while intoxicated with a prior conviction, and two counts of resisting arrest, search, or transport. He remains in the Ector County Jail Monday night on surety bonds totaling $69,500. Call to 911 backfires on Pleasant Farms man. A Pleasant Farms man who thought deputies were going to come to his house to arrest a man he described as a sex offender was arrested instead. According to Ector County Sheriff's Office report, Daniel Rene Sanchez, 37, called 911 Sunday to say he detained a sex offender on his property in the 4500 block of West Mulberry Street. When deputies arrived, Sanchez said he detained at gunpoint a 21-year-old man who had texted inappropriate things to his stepson a week prior, the report stated. The younger man told deputies Sanchez had invited him over to smoke, and when he arrived, Sanchez said he was going inside for water. According to the report, when Sanchez came out, the man said he pushed him to the ground and began kicking and hitting him. The alleged victim stated that Daniel had put a gun to his head, told him he would never hurt a child again, and then pulled the slide back on the gun and the gun jammed, the report stated. He believes that if the gun had not jammed, Daniel would have shot him, causing him serious bodily injury or death. A neighbor told deputies he saw Sanchez with a gun making threats to the younger man, the report stated. Deputies found a 9mm handgun inside Sanchez's RV, according to the report. Sanchez was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. TxDOT issues I-20 traffic alert. The Texas Department of Transportation issued a traffic alert Monday for I-20 from FM 1788 to Loop 250. Nighttime paving on the eastbound frontage road will progress Monday night, August 14th through Thursday night, August 17th from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. One-lane traffic will remain open and shift from the right lane to the left lane Wednesday morning, August 16th. Watch for warning signs and slow-moving construction vehicles in this work zone. Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin announces sub-grant application opportunity. The Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin, LCPB, announced on Monday the opening of its sub-grant application for eligible LCPB members. The application period is underway and will conclude on August 31st. This initiative aims to support and empower LCPB members in their efforts to promote literacy within the Permian Basin community. The LCPB members are invited to apply to a coalition subgrant, which can provide funding of up to $5,000 to booster their literacy programs. This opportunity is a testament to the LCPB's commitment to fostering educational growth and enhancing literacy-related initiatives across the region. Many small rural literacy providers struggle with basic budget items or even staffing. Many are run by volunteers with no background in fundraising or grant writing, said LCPB Executive Director John Trichetti III in a press release. The subgrant program makes available up to $5,000 award for an immediate impact on these small organizations to purchase curriculum and materials, pay for tutors, or offer small programs. LCPB Board Chairman Mark Palmer added, "We are not looking to supplant any existing providers. We are focusing on expanding the capacity of service providers in the 22-county area we serve. These funds allow these organizations to expand their impact as we address awareness of low literacy in the region. People need to understand the severity of this issue. To become eligible for the Coalition subgrant, interested organizations and individuals are encouraged to become LCPB members by visiting literacypb.org/membership. Becoming a member not only opens the door to valuable resources and networking opportunities, but also grants access to the subgrant application process. The Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin aims to promote literacy awareness, adult literacy, family literacy programming, and increasing literacy rates in West Texas and Eastern New Mexico. For more information, visit literacypb.org. TxDOT issues traffic alert for IH-20 between mile marker 143 and 163. The Texas Department of Transportation has issued a traffic alert Monday that starting Monday, August 14th, a large debris removal contractor will start working on IH-20 between mile markers 143 to 163. On Monday, August 14th, they will be working on the eastbound driving lane. On Tuesday, August 15th, they will be working on the westbound driving lane. On Wednesday, August 16th, they will work in the eastbound passing lane first and then turn around and work in the westbound passing lane. This will be a moving operation. The crew will start work between 8 and 8:30 a.m. and will work until 4:30 p.m. Detective sees 600 grams of THC make arrest. Odessa detectives executing a search warrant found 600 grams of THC Thursday night and made an arrest. According to an Odessa Police Department report, detectives arrested Rudy Aguilar on suspicion of manufacturing delivery of a controlled substance after the THC was found in his home in the 3800 block of North Mercury Avenue. Aguilar was released from the Texas County Jail Friday after posting a $5,000 surety bond. The crime is a first-degree felony punishable by 5 years to life in prison.
The Economist by M. Ray Perryman. Keeping things moving. As you probably know, UPS and the Teamsters Union have reached an agreement to narrowly avert a nationwide strike. This high-stakes standoff likely wasn't nightly dinner table conversation for most of you, but the issue was far more impactful than merely one company and its 340,000 or so workers directly involved in the negotiations. A strike would have caused delivery delays, challenged the supply chain, pushed up inflation, and affected individuals and businesses across the world. It would have been particularly problematic for rural residents and those requiring critical medical supplies. Globally, UPS serves 1.6 million shippers with deliveries to 11.1 million customers in over 220 countries and territories. In 2022, the company delivered an average of 24.3 million packages daily. Competitors such as FedEx and the U.S. Postal Service would certainly have stepped up and filled some, but not much, of the gap, but inevitably both prices and delivery times would have risen notably. About half of UPS deliveries are business to business rather than business to consumer, although consumers would have been inconvenienced in some instances significantly. Slowing business-to-business shipments would bring even larger effects due to the ripples through the supply chain as production processes were negatively affected. It is easy to lose sight of just how interconnected our complex economy is and how even modest disruptions in the flow of goods and services can wreak havoc. The items that are present in virtually any room that you enter will have inputs from more than 100 countries. The recent disruptions that were observed during the aftermath of the pandemic are reminder enough of the chaos and inefficiency that ensues when things don't arrive on time. A work stoppage of any length of time would have cost billions. In fact, our analysis shows that a 30-day strike would have resulted in about $50 billion in losses across a broad swath of the economy. At a broader level, the balance of power in labor negotiations during this summer of strikes is shifting somewhat towards workers due to tight market conditions. Union membership accounts for about 6% of private industry jobs, 7.2 million people, a proportion which has been falling slightly over time. Among government workers, about 33% are in unions, or 7.1 million, with the percentages also dropping. It is difficult to compare outcomes for union workers to non-union workers. The types of occupations vary widely. Generally, union workers have higher pay and benefits, but they also work in specific job categories. It is difficult to isolate what portion of the pay differential is due to union versus other factors. In any case, it's great news that the strike didn't happen, and we don't need any more headwinds. Stay safe.
Dear Abby, husband ambivalent about becoming a dad. Dear Abby, my husband and I have been married 10 years. When we tried to have kids for the first time, we discovered I have polycystic ovary syndrome. We quit trying when the doctor visits became more than we could afford. We tried again after my husband saw a movie that moved him emotionally. Nothing came from that, so we stopped trying again. I always assumed we'd give it a go one last time, but now my husband says he doesn't want a kid right now and may never want one. He did say that if we wound up pregnant, he'd be fine with it. He also said he'd be terrified at first, but he'd settle into emergency mode and handle it. Abby, I don't know what to do. I most likely won't get pregnant without a fertility specialist, but my husband made it clear he's not into trying to have a baby. He'd only be fine with a baby if it just happened. What do I do? Signed, Empty Arms, in Texas. Dear Empty Arms, your husband doesn't sound like a man who is yearning for fatherhood. Quite the opposite. The likelihood of your just happening to become pregnant is nil without medical intervention. There's no compromise here. If you two are going to be able to stay together, you should be talking about this with a licensed counselor, or you can discuss whether options other than you conceiving a baby are acceptable. Dear Abby, I am by nature a pretty friendly, jovial kind of person. I take people as I find them and try not to pass judgment on anyone until I get to know them at least a little. Lately, more and more often, people, even ones I've known for years, have begun saying critical and frankly rude things to me. I don't think I have said anything to them that could be construed as offensive. I do know I'm somewhat outspoken and can be a little opinionated, though. Could my easygoing jocularity somehow make people think it's okay to be rude to me? I have ended several friendships for this reason. I don't want to stifle myself. I want to continue being friendly and outgoing, but I'm not sure how to do that without being further insulted. Have people become so shallow that they only respect others who are reserved or even hostile? That's a sad world to contemplate. Good guy in Hawaii. Dear good guy, the next time this happens, ask the person why they reacted that way they did and whether you offended them in some way. and their opinion is different from yours, you should listen. In recent years, civility has taken a beating, and people have become polarized and less tolerant of opinions that differ from their own. I think we learn by listening to others, and if we lose that ability, our society will have lost something very important.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.